Game Boys.
Hey there, Internet. Welcome back to the Game Boys podcast. My name is Lux, and with me, as always, it's your co-host. You can see him at the Super Bowl playing halftime with Maroon 5. It's Griffin Davis.
Playing halftime with Maroon 5.
Did you not? Now I have news that you didn't see.
Okay, let me try and guess who it could be.
No, I mean, I kind of said the news.
Oh, Maroon 5?
Maroon 5 is playing the fucking halftime show at the Super Bowl.
Oh, I thought they were paired with someone controversial, and like that's who you were saying I was.
I just said it's Maroon 5, and I think that's really funny.
Bring back Kid Rock. Remember when Kid Rock used to be at the halftime shows?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Because I want to be a cowboy, baby.
So are you ever going to surprise the audience with doing like a shorter boys?
Maybe one day. I was thinking about doing that today, actually, but then I just wanted to lean into it a little bit. Here's the thing, Griffin. I've been working a lot the past couple of days, I haven't had a lot of human contact.
I know you've been working a lot, and if you guys have been following our social media, you were unplugged in a crazy way yesterday.
Well, that's my point. I haven't had any human contact in a while, so I wanted to stretch the boys out because I just like haven't said anything to anyone for days. But yeah, no, I did. I missed the big news about our big wet president's weird looking dick.
How do you've heard about this, right?
No, I totally did. I was like timing.
Pristine timing. And you'll see why later.
Yeah.
I'm pissed. How do you feel, Lux?
I feel a couple of ways. One. Remember early on in this process, we had this conversation. I said, because of all the sex investigation, Donald Trump, we're going to have to hear all about his sex life and his dick and the weird things he likes. And I'm not happy that process is starting, but I am happy that I was right about what his dick looks like.
Yeah, but it had to, like a total innocent victim bystander was like slain in the process.
No, in the Stormy Daniels Donald Trump beef, Toad caught a stray in a big way.
Yeah, no, I love Stormy Daniels' earlier work. I'm talking about just like the earlier law stuff with the thing, but she took it too far this time. I mean, did she have to ruin it?
This is what I'm saying.
Something
it's
special.
Be inevitable. Yeah, because well, maybe that's just the only good thing to compare it to.
Yeah, but I don't
know. Actually,
it's
just that can't be true because
Toad
like
is just such a sweet little thing, you know, and to ruin
it. I don't know why we're bringing such a nice boy into this
conversation. How do you feel about this?
Well, I mean, Toad always does say he's the best, so I can't help but draw that comparison.
Oh, no.
Bang, I know. Bang, it's unfortunate. I hate to say it.
So he was hiding in plain sight this whole time.
I think, you know, Toad just wants to make America great again.
Does Toad want to keep the Koopas out of Mushroom Kingdom?
Oh, man.
I mean...
Canonically, yes. Oh, God. Oh, well, my entire thing. Well, okay, Stormy, you're back on my good side.
Stormy, you made it back on Griffin's good list. All right, Griff, let's get through this already bullshit so we can introduce our guest. What have you been playing recently?
I beat the Spider-Mans.
Did you 100% the Spider-Mans? Just, like,
no,
I just beat the
Spider-Mans. And I'm so sorry, God of War, to ever think that something could top you as Game of the Year. God of War remains the best game of the year. Spider-Man kind of dropped the ball in a lot of ways that we'll probably just talk more about in depth maybe in a future episode.
Probably will. Here's the thing. You think that God of War is Game of the Year, but I'm going to say this. I think Divinity 2 is Game of the Year.
That game didn't come out this year.
It did for PlayStation, Xbox.
Yeah, count for it.
Okay. I think it's Game of last year. It's so good. It's fucking crazy. Like, there's just like, what I like about it is that there's infinite ways to solve like every puzzle. Like today I got stuck because I was in a mine full of traps and I kept dying because I'm not good at watching where I'm walking.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, how am I going to get out of this? And then I found a spell that gives me wings. So I just flew across the tunnel to the other side.
So if you're bad at doing things, there's just easy get out of.
Well, it's not a question. If you're bad at doing one kind of thing, you do a different thing. Like, if I hadn't made my dude a polymorph shape changing wizard, I wouldn't have had that option. But I did.
Wow. That freedom to be a wizard.
No, it's cool. Like, I don't know. I like puzzle games, but especially puzzle games where the puzzles have like four or five solutions rather than just like one.
Sure. Well, that sounds like a good game. Doesn't sound like a game I'll play anytime soon.
It's like 100 hours turn-based RPG. I don't think it's really one that's like your bag.
Last thing before we introduce our guest and before she just completely passes out from boredom. No. I have successfully unsubscribed from World of Warcraft, Lux.
Congratulations.
I only played for like 2.5 weeks this time.
Good job.
Nice.
I just, you know, there's too many games to play, and we got this podcast, and I've got a responsibility to our fans to, you know, play the games and not just watch the videos.
Mm-hmm. I agree 100% that that's what you should do. And also, I just think that, like, World of Warcraft, even, like, the most healthy version of it is, like, it's a game that depends on, like, conditioning you to get addicted to stuff.
Yeah, and I got what I wanted out of it, and I was able to quit, you know? So I'm feeling good about that. Moving on, we have a really great guest this week.
I'm feeling good about our guest. Oh, wow.
So good about our guest.
Straight segue.
She already completely turned the Toad controversy on her head. She is a hilarious comedian based in Los Angeles, California, Chelsea Pope.
Oh, my God.
Welcome to the podcast.
Wow.
Thank you for coming down on this afternoon of yours to waste an hour and a half.
Oh my gosh, I'd be wasting it at home otherwise. So thank you for having me. I appreciate the company. I'm not in a void anymore.
The big benefit of this podcast is giving people ways to waste time outside of their
house. I love
it.
Thank you. That's all I want. No,
thank
really.
You so much for coming. So here's a question that's probably insanely stupid, which will set the tone. Have you ever thought what people would call you if you were the Pope?
If I were the Pope, I mean,
they'd call me the Pope,
it'd
be
right?
Pope.
Oh yeah, well, Pope.
It's like they get new names.
They call me Pope Pope. I'd be like, "What up?"
Pope. Damn, Pope is really good.
Maybe a new character.
What up? I'm Pope Pope.
Did you guys see The Young Pope on HBO?
No, I didn't.
I didn't.
I thought huge missed opportunity to be a really fun show about a young pope.
I mean, it could have been funny.
Okay.
That seems like it would have been a good, like, 90s comedy movie.
Right.
Right. It wasn't like the goofy Disney Channel original movie Macaulay Culkin's little brother becomes
the
Pope.
That'd be so funny. Like Blank Check, but the young Pope.
Let's get more Culkins in there.
I was chosen by God? Let's party!
Yeah.
blank papacy. No, it was a really good show, though. I used to go on this basketball podcast, weirdly, and do a segment where I'd review every episode of The Young Pope each week.
Oh my God.
That sounds like it really cohes with the rest of the podcast.
Well, you know, that's my brand, dude. It's just shoving shit where it doesn't belong.
There's an audience for everything, I feel like, if there's one thing I've learned from podcasting scene, right?
That's true.
Basically.
Yeah. There's an audience of 30 for everybody.
Pretty much.
The listener reaction was not totally positive.
Yeah.
People were like, who is this dude? Why does he sound so stoned? And why are we talking about the young Pope?
Oh, man, you're eliciting a response. That's positive. That's the goal.
Yeah. Yeah, you ain't made it till you hate it.
Yeah, you ain't made it till you hate it.
In that case,
that
I made it so long ago.
So Chelsea, we know you have a future potentially in the Vatican, but let's talk a little bit about your past.
Oh, here we go.
If you'll allow us to.
Oh, okay. Let's do it. Let's get the skeletons out.
So I met you at an open mic at UCB, right?
Not Too Shabby shows.
Yes. And you're doing characters up there every week.
That you got to get the reps in.
Yeah. That was always really fun to watch you do. But where are you from originally? I actually don't know much about you.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, okay. Well, here it is. I'm from Rancho Cucamonga. Grew up there, very typical suburb life.
That's Southern California, right?
Yeah, it's like an hour east from here.
Cool. Thank you for asking, Griffin.
Yeah, you're like, where is like that? Doesn't everybody know where Rancho Cucamonga
is? Ireland must have been crazy.
Oh, yeah. Rancho Cucamonga, Ireland.
Are there ranches there? And also, what's a Cucamonga?
Okay, so it translates to Sandy Ranch. Like, literally the name Rancho Cucamonga.
It does sound like Australian or something, right? Or New Zealand. It doesn't sound...
It definitely does. And also...
Rancho
Cucamonga. Cucamonga.
If I could give one note on naming that town.
Yeah, sure.
Sandy Ranch is not a good ranch.
No, it's not. Stunningly accurate, but not a good ranch at all. You can't really grow things on a sandy ranch. That's why all the grapevines died.
What are the horses going to eat?
That's a good question. There aren't really a lot of horses in Rancho. I always thought that was really weird. There's like horse trails. There's dirt trails, but like no one has horses. Even like the rich people don't have horses.
No, I remember driving through Orange County and seeing some rich ass white people riding their horses like on an intersection where horses had no business
fucking
being.
Fucking insane privilege. To me, that's wild. But like that's true though. There are people that, you know, you would go up in the hills.
But that's like a weird level of rich. Like if I'm ever rich enough to own horses, it's like on an estate somewhere.
You would think,
like,
right?
It's like my farmhouse or whatever, and there's horses on it. Like I'm not going to like live in like a nice-ish gated community suburb and like ride my horse next to cars. That's weird, right?
But you want the attention,
it also seems
don't
dangerous
you?
For
yeah.
The horse.
Yeah, exactly. It just seems like shitty for the horse.
No one knows that you're like a special rich though, and the horse can take it. I mean, come on. You're sitting on it. No, I'm just being...
Yeah, it's like,
I feel like you could just put a horse on a non-sandy ranch, and if you want people to know you were rich, just buy a crown.
I mean, you would think, but, you know, I think it's just, there's a multi-purpose with the horse. You can get places with it.
Sure. Yeah.
You know?
I'm just saying there's nothing worse.
Horses, you know, or rich people.
Well, there's nothing worse than like a poor rich person, right?
Yeah, that's how I feel.
Frugal rich person.
Yeah. Okay, so you grew up amongst what maybe one to two horses and a lot of rich,
you know,
people.
It was a weird cross section. Uh-huh. Like it's kind of like how out here, like a couple blocks higher in Los Feliz, there's like mansions and whatnot, and then a couple blocks lower, it's like gets a little sketchy. It was like that in Rancho Cucamonga too, where it's like there was like the higher, like the hills area. It's like a lot of bougie people, sure, and fancy track housing. Mm-hmm. And then the further down you go, they turn to like single story. Mm-hmm. And then it just starts to get a little bit funkier.
Those sketchy people that only make $90,000 a year.
And that's where I lived. That's where I lived. Sketchy middle class. No.
So when I was younger, my family moved to the suburbs, and I always noticed that there was like always this weird tension of like, because you're right, there are like always fancy people and non-fancy people sharing space in the suburbs.
Yeah, totally.
And like there'd always be these hilarious interactions of like rich people just not understanding the rules of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like I used to work at a pizza place and I got screamed at for not making giant pizzas for people. Like,
oh my God.
We sold jumbo slices.
Well, you got screamed at for not making them giant enough.
They were not big enough.
Yeah, no, we made jumbo slices and this guy came in once and was like, hey, can I get a jumbo pizza? And I was like, no, like the slices are the size of like the oven width-wise. And he was like, well, just put them all in at once. I was like, I can't do that. He was like, can you make me eight and put them in a box?
Andre,
I was like, I don't have a box big enough to fit eight of these slices in a circle. That would be like 2 feet across.
Who is this lunatic?
And I feel like you get that in like all kinds of weird suburb areas. Yes. And just like you get like the working class place and this rich dude just shows up and yells at everyone. Have you ever seen any like of that kind of nonsense where you were living?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. It was a weird mix of people that were like aspiring for middle class and people who were just like wealthier than middle class, but they wanted to like show off, mm-hmm, like wanted to be the big, oh, yeah, big fish in the small pond, so to speak. So they had like, mm-hmm, really tricked out nice shit. And then you'd have other people that were like in a nice house, but definitely not taking care of their cars, maybe in exchange,
like,
or I don't know.
It was like sort of the housing equivalent of like when I buy jeans one size too small, so I'll force myself to lose weight.
Bingo.
It was like I buy this super fancy house, so I force myself to get rich.
Yes.
It's that kind of
manifestation.
It's that kind of impossible aspiration we're talking about, Lux.
Oh, absolutely.
I've lost a size of pounds before.
You know? Honestly, you look slimmer without the hat today.
I also shaved, and I also have lost weight. I also haven't eaten for 2 days.
Oh,
that's true.
That'll
there
do
you
it.
Go. That'll do it. Especially the last
but I forgot to eat yesterday, and today is Yom Kippur. By the way,
okay, congrats.
Good job, Yom Kippur.
Is it still
Yom
Kippur?
What you're supposed to say.
I don't know either.
But Chelsea,
Yom Kippur,
enough
holiday.
About Yom Kippur, goddammit. We don't care. Every week with Yom Kippur.
Literally once a year.
Oh my God.
Literally just today.
So this is kind of a big deal then if it's every week.
Yeah, I know
that
we chose to record on the most important day on the Jewish calendar, and that was your choice.
Oh man.
But this is not a Yom Kippur podcast. All right, I'll see
job.
Myself
good
out.
Good job. Good job.
It is a Yom Kippur podcast. What are you doing?
So Chelsea, when did you move to LA?
I moved here 2011, mm-hmm, to finish my English Lit degree. I was going to community college in Rancho Cucamonga and then transferred to UCLA to get my bachelor's. And I lived in Westwood for a hot minute. And then I decided I wanted to.
Ooh, Westwood.
I was in, well, you know, that's where the school's at. And I had some roommates there. And then I wanted to be on my own. So I moved to Los Feliz. My mom and my dad used to manage a building kind of in this area when they were like my age. So there's something about like the symmetry of that, like me going over to the east side where it's like the cool people. I don't know. That's an overstatement maybe, but
no. The east side is where you want to live currently.
Yeah.
In Los Angeles. You
like
definitely don't want to live in Westwood.
I definitely like was always more attracted to the energy of being more inland as opposed to the west side. It was like
Westwood's great if you're if you're like a middle-aged millionaire with like a pill problem.
There
like,
you go.
It's
I mean,
that's so sad over there to me.
Pretty spot
Westwood
on.
Also
pretty spot on.
One of the best game development companies of the 90s.
Which one?
Westwood.
Oh, okay.
Westwood Studios. They made all the Krondor games. They made the Command & Conquer games. And they made other stuff.
Whoa.
Okay.
So speaking of games, and this really great segue I made that's very clever.
Yeah, for sure.
When
really
you were growing up in Rancho Cucamonga, or even when you moved to LA,
uh-huh,
have you been playing games like all along? Or like what's your relationship with video games?
I think,
how'd you get into this shit?
You know, different games, like I'll lock into them and get really into them. Like coming out to LA, I was like still really into World of Warcraft at the time.
Oh,
yeah. There was this guy I was dating while I was in junior college, and he and his brother were addicted to that game. And I was like the jealous girlfriend, like, you're not giving me enough energy.
So you got World of Warcraft.
He was like, babe, you should try it, you know? And I was like, okay, I guess I'll be like a blood elf or something. You were a blood elf.
Shocker.
Too. They're very attractive.
Yeah, I mean, y'all both kind of like looked apart for blood elves. I'd be an orc.
Yeah. Oh, you'd be an orc? Yeah. Well, my.
Or like a dwarf or something, maybe.
They're sturdy.
They have these weird, really long incisors that you can't really see on the
screen. Yeah, you're an orc. I fight for the Horde anyway. I've never been that big on the Alliance, personally. I always just thought they were like, they're like, oh, you're like so good. You're like knights. You're like humans and stuff. Like, yeah, exactly. You're so great.
The Alliance players are like the Rancho Cucamonga people.
Yeah, that's pretty much this. Me being part of the Horde was rebelling against my upbringing. 100%.
That's so funny. I always feel like I'm embarrassed to talk about World of Warcraft, and then I discover people that I didn't expect ever to have played that.
No, dude. No, to be fair, it was like a really addicting game. Like, once you got into it, you know, it like got incrementally harder. And then, yeah, you start like getting into the stuff. You're like, man, I want to get like that fancy cloak. And then if you collect too much rest experience, this was the issue I was having, where like we'd quit for like swaths of time, my ex and I, and then we'd come back in, we get all this rest experience, but then like our armor didn't match our level that we were now at, and so then we'd have to like just spend all this time burning on shitty quests just to like level up our armor so that we could actually go to like Azeroth? I don't know. I don't remember all the places. Azeroth. Just so we could actually like be formidable players in a raid, and like people wouldn't like troll us and kick us out or whatever.
So how did your WoW career end?
Well, when I transferred to UCLA, I remember I got my I used part of my loan to get a MacBook, and like I downloaded World of Warcraft onto it. And then just literally after like the first week of classes, I was like, grow the fuck up. This is so stupid.
There's breaking points. And usually is when like something else in your life is like clearly more important. And like,
yeah, exactly. I was like, Chelsea, like you worked really fucking hard to get to, you know, just get yourself through college to get to this point. And like, let this go. I think I was still playing a little bit, like, because I was still in a relationship with the guy that I was playing. We were going on these quests and whatnot together. And
this is the most romantic thing I've ever heard.
Oh, it was. That was the peak of our relationship. We'd be in separate rooms in his house. Like, he'd be upstairs.
I'm resubscribing right now.
Yeah, you just gotta find the blood elf to your orc. Well, you know, because he was an orc, and we would go on quests, and we'd have to play in separate rooms because there were two different computers. We couldn't play side by side. But like, we'd literally sit for hours and hours just questing in different rooms. Is terrible. Anyway,
Christian, what you have to do is just model your Tinder bio after this conversation. Just find someone who wows.
I've been trying to break away from that genre of the Tinder dating bio. Pool. Yeah, just that dating pool in general.
I like the genre of dating apps.
Just dating apps in general suck. But I think I need somebody who's a little more extroverted, who's not gonna be like, that's a great idea. Let's sit at home for 10 hours and during the summertime. It's like the most beautiful time of year, and we have a pool outside.
See, my whole deal is I do spend 10 hours a day inside during the summer, but in Texas, the summer is a poison. It's a murderous poison.
Well, it's getting hotter. That's tough.
You're right. It was easier to play World of Warcraft in Texas because outside was not an option.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I never got into it, but I feel like if I got into it, it would be way easier for me to get into it here than it would be for me to get into it in LA.
Absolutely.
Or like in California. Because like in California, you can go outside in the summer.
There's nice things to do.
Not the worst experience of your life.
It has gotten hotter. And like, I enjoy a nice day in a cool air conditioned space and whatnot. But especially back then, it was like, why are we wasting precious time together? Especially when I knew I was going to be transferring to a different school, and like he was still finishing his associates, and like we didn't have that much time left together, so to speak. And then like why aren't we like?
Well, that's kind of interesting. That it became like a bonding thing, and then it became like kind of like a anti bonding thing.
I think it was a form of togetherness and avoidance at the same time.
Right.
Like we were speaking the same language when we were playing this game, or like when we'd watch movies and like throw ourselves into like consuming stuff together. But then like one-on-one time could be Anyway, this isn't like a relationship podcast, right?
No, it is now.
It is now. Well, it's one thing, when this podcast gets most interesting is when our guests have something that's related to video games that isn't video games, because we don't have to get boring listening to me talk about mechanics.
Oh, no, for sure.
45 minutes.
My first guild, major guild in WoW that I would like show up for every week and play with was run by a married couple, and their fights would like bleed into the guild and stuff, and like eventually the guild broke up because divorced. See? In real life, and then like they transferred servers, and back then like that was a big deal. I'm leaving this server.
That's a huge deal.
Being like, I broke up with you and I'll be stepping into the alternate reality where Kirsten Dunstan, Gwyneth Paltrow have switched lives.
There you
and everything
go.
Else is the same.
Yeah.
But so one other thing I wanted to ask you about before we get into the game you brought is that I met you when you were doing characters out here.
For sure.
And that seems to be something that you like to do a lot on the stage is do these characters. Are these characters people that, like, you know? Or like, where do you get them from?
Yeah. Well, it's definitely a lot of them are inspired from people that I know, whether it's a physical affect or their point of view. Some of them I have a clearer idea of what I want to execute, like what the funny thing really is about it that like was memorable about that person. And then in other cases, it's like exploring hypotheticals or just going into like what are all the funky, weird emotions that we experience underneath our surface level interactions. Like, where does the anger, jealousy, or defensiveness, or the feelings where like inferiority comes in?
I hear that the funky feelings underneath is an interesting way to put it, because I do feel
there's
like
probably a better there's probably way
no
better
but I do feel
that.
Like everyone
like
I interact with is very like
album.
Cordial. I'm cordial with everyone, but there are different experiences of different people, and there are those funky feelings underneath.
100%. Like, you feel that you could, you know, sometimes you'll talk to somebody and you can feel this. Well, I'm doing really good too. I'm you know, my life is great.
I get sucked into energies really quickly, so. Yeah. Someone else's energy, like if they've got something going on and I'm just like a blank slate, I'm like, oh, now I'm just feeling whatever you're doing.
I'm in your feelings. Like,
oh, we are very different that way. If I am sleepy, I will bring a room down with me. And if I have my energy, I will like.
So we're the absorbers to your mess.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about my personality, but this does happen. Is like I will. Ruin. I will like bring an energy that will ruin the space that I'm in most of the time.
I relate to that. I think I relate to that though, and I think like part of going doing the characters that I do, at least like the creation and working on them, is like for a way for me to channel those feelings, because when they just stow away in myself, they bleed out in how I interact with other people, and like. I want to get along with people, but I also have this, there's also this like a yucky, weird thing or funny, funky, weird thing that I need to express, you know?
It would be cool to get along with people. I do wonder what that would be.
What's it like to get along? I'm still learning that too, though. I think we all are.
I imagine it's insanely cool. Do you ever, when you're considering these characters, I mean, like, so these, I haven't, so Griffin's new performs, so he has like all this extra intel, like scouting report that I don't have. but like, do you ever think about like these kind of things when you like, I don't know, if you play the kind of video games, like these kind of character questions come up, or do you think about this kind of thing in the kind of like your WoW character?
Oh yeah. In the context of like gameplay and whatnot, I think that there's a lot of that influence on like how I perceive things, or like, you know, the relationships that you have with the people that you're playing with, or if with you're just playing with yourself to decompress, without like rambling too much. Like, we were talking about my ex just now with World of Warcraft, but there's like, every game inspires there's like this nostalgic step back into like who you were and who you were with when you're playing those games, like board game night with my family. My mom's favorite game was Sorry. And I think in some ways I look back and I'm like, was
poorly,
my mom
poorly designed?
It's a terrible game. But like, I think my mom was having us play that just so we would like learn manners better in a weird way, you know, like looking at that. Or like, my sister was the one who had we both had video game consoles. We were spoiled little kids, but like I had the PS2 and she had the Nintendo 64.
Ooh,
and, I was actually really like jealous of her, cause she, you know, I would have to sneak into her room when she wasn't in it, or I'd have to like, we'd have to negotiate, times where we could switch game consoles.
Putting a PS2 and an N64 in separate rooms.
I know. This is rough.
Demilitarized zone shit. This is some North Korea shit. There's a lot of that.
In your metaphor, it's a militarized zone.
You're right.
I think my mom like kind of polarized my sister and I with stuff to like games, for instance, you know? So it's interesting how that works.
Do you see it ever go the other direction where like stuff you did in video game stuff influences the way that you like perceive or put together characters? Like, does that ever happen to you?
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, you can take feelings and pieces from like what you're feeling while you're playing the game or from the characters and like the story work that comes up in the games themselves. Like, there's plenty of interesting characters in World of Warcraft. I know that's not the game that I'm here for, but like, in other video games too, there's like, weird, crazy archetypes that you can delve into, like, the villain characters and, like I think about like the Crash Bandicoot, the villain in that. Like what a weirdo that guy was.
Neocortex,
he's a big head. He's such a weirdo, right?
That's so funny. Yeah.
So these things,
some of those games do actually have good, big, broad comedic characters that you don't think about.
Yeah.
Like games like Spyro and Crash.
Yes, Spyro's another one.
They did have, like I remember Mr. Moneybags from Spyro.
Yeah.
He's like the bear that's always charging you money.
Yes.
Like that was a very funny character.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely that. The last wrestling show that we did. I write and do stuff for this wrestling show that's very, very weird. The bad guy we've been crafting for like four shows in a row is like explicitly based, or like not explicitly, but it was very much based off of like a Final Fantasy villain.
Oh, yeah. See,
like just Sephiroth?
Like, Sephiroth or like what's his name from Six or like any of those guys who are just like, I know how to fix the world and I'll do it with my powers and I don't care who it hurts because of justice.
Yeah, those are great characters you can play with, you know? Like there's good story work that like you can find.
But speaking of stories, I think we should get into a little bit of his story.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
About the game you've brought on this week.
Oh, yes. I'm into that.
So just imagine there's epic music playing right now. In the early 1990s of Japan, one racing game had captured the hearts of gamers with its high-speed, futuristic racing. Its name was F-Zero, and it was quickly becoming one of the most popular games in Japan. Nintendo producer Shigeru Miyamoto could tell racing games were the hot new thing and wanted to cash in on the car craze. Miyamoto's goal was to create a racing game that could allow two players to race each other, distinguishing themselves from the one-player fare of F-Zero. The first prototype never featured Mario. Instead, it was merely a generic man in overalls in the cart. When observing how one cart looked to another driving past it, they decided to see what it would look like with Mario in the cart. Thinking that having Mario in the cart looked better than previous designs, the idea of a Mario-themed racing game was born. Super Mario Kart was released in 1992 and has been credited with inventing the kart racing subgenre of video gaming, and soon after its release, seemingly every other major developer was creating their own version to lesser success. With multiple sequels and Mario sports-based adventures created for decades after, this game represents the birth of one of the most popular franchises of all time. This week on Game Boys, we're driving over all the bananas with Mario Kart!
Great read.
Wait, that's fucking psycho. I always thought that this game was like, they were like, we have Mario, everyone loves a Mario, we're gonna monetize this by like making a bunch of different Mario games. I didn't realize they were just making a racing game absent the idea of Mario, and then we're just like, we'll just stick Mario in Smash, which we did a few weeks ago.
People were just making a game and we're like, this game kind of sucks. What if we put Mario in it?
Yeah, suddenly it's like you can project yourself onto these relatable characters and then it's like way more, it just makes it way more fun. Otherwise, it's not as interesting for some reason.
In my brain, I always thought Nintendo was like this incredible like foresight company that was like, and then we'll have a racing game and everyone will love it because they're fine Mario there. No. And then we'll do tennis. And instead it was just like, we just keep making games that are shitty and trying to mail them out by sticking Mario in them, and it always works.
Does that not make them just so much more human and relatable and
accessible?
It makes them entrepreneurs.
There you go.
It makes Miyamoto-san seem less like a wizard and more like a person.
There you go.
Yeah, it makes it seem...
Which I both like and don't
it
like.
It makes it seem attainable. But yeah, it's so funny that... this entire, one of the most popular things of all time, like would have been just a forgettable generic thing without character. Cause like, that's what people really care about. Like imagine playing this game with just like Racer 1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh, you know, and what I find interesting too, I'm like.
To be fair, in the new one, I do race with Uncle a lot. The generic me character.
Oh, yeah.
But that's just cause you're a contrarian.
It's funny to do that.
That's fair.
I'm a living troll.
Yeah, I will say like there's another N64 game I liked playing. It was 1080, And I was could you imagine though if that had been Mario themed, how much like even cooler that might have been? Yeah. I don't know. I love the idea of like Princess Peach snowboarding.
Yeah, it fucking rules. Well, that's the thing. It's like those characters are so like attenuated to the Mushroom Kingdom that sticking them like anywhere else is always like,
ooh. Yeah, like what's gonna happen, you know, like how does that
happens
affect?
If Yoshi plays tennis? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, because you know there's the different ones were faster than others or had like funnier little isms and the sound effects that they made. They all were interesting like that.
And so many other places immediately after this game come out tried to do exactly that.
Yeah,
I don't know what it is about these characters and if they just got there first or what, but like they try to do it with Sonic right after. They made a Sonic racing game. It didn't do as well.
They're just not as enjoyable.
I don't, yeah.
The iconoclastic Mario. Just Mario, I think, he has more history. I think he's, I don't know. I think there's maybe a more enjoyable, whimsical storyline to him.
Just the artwork maybe.
Yeah. I didn't really get into Sonic as a kid. I think Mario was a little more unisex too, in a weird way, if that makes sense. I think Sonic there's something gender-based a little bit. I think Sonic did feel a little bit dude-ish when I was like a kid.
I think that's definitely true.
I'm sure there's female like gamers and whatnot that are like, that's not true. I loved Sonic growing up. I just didn't have a Sega. That's probably what it really was. I didn't have a phone.
That's part of it. But Sonic's definitely coded more like in that traditional like 90s male extreme sports mode than Mario.
Yeah, he's hardcore. You know, he's got that like the way he's designed and he spin rolls.
I'm going fast.
Yeah, I'm a fireball. Yeah. I'm coming at you.
And I just don't think that like Sonic ever, like Sonic and Tails are obviously like sort of as compelling a duo as Mario and Luigi or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I don't think there was ever like the same like breadth of stuff. Like there was no Toad. There was no like
Peach.
No,
it's also like the prince. There's also a weird knight in shining armor quality with Mario and princesses and castles and the lore of all that, like just like that just strikes like a way bigger nerve, I think, in culture.
Strikes a chord in a way,
exactly. Strikes a chord. There you go.
So why did you bring this game on in particular?
Because similarly, like it struck a really big chord for me as a kid. It was it was like the most fun, addictive, accessible game for me. It's something you could play by yourself. You could play up to four people. There were different ways that you could play it. There was the different feels from the characters, depending on if you rode with Donkey Kong and it was easier to like push people out of the way with him, or you could do like Toadstool because he was faster. Or Peach just because she was, you know, cute. Mm-hmm. And
did Peach have a power?
I don't know what her power was.
I think she was closer to like the Mario spec, just like pretty middle of the road.
Yeah, pretty middle of the road. But also too, like the time in my life playing that, like as a kid, that was an especially fun, addictive game. And my sister and I, we'd play that together, and like we were both very competitive. And when we play that, I was usually Peach and she preferred to be Toad, actually, Toadstool. I don't know, that just like the things that I remember from that were just really fun. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just a good game. It's a fun game.
The N64 one is one of the best games for sure. Yeah. It's an incredibly good game for sure. I do have a controversial opinion about this. We'll get to later, but the thing about that is it came out, at least for me, and I think we're all around the same age, like the prime, like, sit on the couch with your friends or siblings and play video games together age. And it was always like you had Mario Party, which was fun, but it was like a 4-person, like 2-hour commitment.
Yeah, it's much. I only just played like version of the Mario Party recently, like with friends. And I mean, I was also kind of crossfaded. Maybe that was part of the problem. It's just too much stimuli. Happening.
Well, this is a very pro Mario Party podcast. I might actually be in LA for Mario Party release.
Which by the way, if you're in Los Angeles,
sounds like a big deal.
I am hosting a launch day party. For Super Mario Party for the Nintendo Switch on October 5th.
Might be there as a special guest. I can't remember what time my flight is or what day it is, but I think it's then. I can't remember.
Like you land or when you leave?
I think I either get in the day before or I get in that early afternoon that day.
Well, we'll be going for like a week straight, so it'll be fine.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm just saying I'm going to get in on it. But anyways, we're not talking about Mario Party, we're talking about Mario Kart. And so this is a question I have. Have you played... did you keep playing like the new editions that came out at all?
I have not. I only played hardcore 64. I was just on that. We didn't really upgrade games too much. I think that was like a lengthy phase, but still just a phase of my sister and I's lives. You know, I think that was like yeah, elementary, maybe early middle school, where we really played a lot of those games. And then we started doing other little extracurriculars and whatnot as we got older. But
right. That was an era that those couple games was an era where, like, you weren't a video gamer if you played them. Like,
it was most people played it.
Played them.
Yeah.
It was accessible. It wasn't too expensive. It wasn't too much of a time investment.
Also, it was not like a hard game.
It's arcade.
I really appreciated that about it. Because, like, as a kid, I just would get... I didn't like challenging games. Uh-huh. I think what was nice about Mario Kart is it was just easier to play than even like, I had PS2 games that were like too hard for me. I think as a kid, like Spider-Man, I remember trying to play Spider-Man and I would always be just in the practice grid, like trying to just swing and shit. So I was like, there's no stakes here. This is safe. Like I wouldn't.
And everyone's kind of at the same level of skill with Mario Kart.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like, very few people. I mean, there are people who play
tell that
competitively.
To former guests of the show, Laura Lewis, aka Dill. She's a very good at that game, and it is not fun to play with her. Really.
Sure, but I think over most people, everyone's at a similar skill level as opposed to lots of games today, where it's like your friend. If I try to get my friends to play a game, I'm gonna be way better than them at it. It's not gonna be fun.
Yeah, exactly. You want it to be a little more like it's the fun of it. You know, it's silly. It's like that's what it's not like violent when you fall off the bridge.
Yeah, there's like two buttons.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you fall off and then like this guy on the cloud with the hook comes and gets you. It's like silly, you know? Or
do we know that man's name?
What is that?
Malakitu.
Yeah, okay, so he's the Ex Machina character that comes and rescues you when you fall off the rainbow road.
And he's the cameraman and he floats in a cloud and has the fishing pole.
What an unsung hero that fool is, man. Really, he's really saving the day.
I think they let you play with him in one of the later games.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
I'm going to say for this one.
It's like who watches the Watchmen, though? Like, who's going to rescue him when he goes off the bridge?
Who hooks the hookman?
Oh, my God.
Who lifeguards the lifeguard?
Ooh, yeah.
But, like, I played this game recently at a party, and I was shocked at how hard it was.
Oh, yeah.
I have Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, I think, for the Switch, which is the one they released for the Switch, which is like a port of the Wii U one or something. And that's very like smooth and streamlined and like very fun and easy to play. Playing 64, I got my ass kicked. It's just like a little bit jankier and it's like...
Yeah, there is some jankiness to it. I remember that.
There's jank and there's also like, it's not as forgiving as the newer ones. Like your gas takes longer to start up.
Yeah.
And like, when you hit a corner, you like...
Come I kind of like
halt.
That though.
Yeah, it's like it's punishing.
You could drive into the ocean in theory and get like stuck. Like when you're on the island one in particular, if you go into the wet sand, like you feel the repercussions of that pretty quickly. Or, I mean it was well done. Like the pitfalls were like not insubstantial. Like that's something that's very true. Or like the freeway one. When you're driving against traffic on the freeway, that's a tough one. Yeah.
Yeah. Like those when I'm tough. Playing the new ones, I get ahead of everyone else and I'm like, okay, I just got to maintain this. But like when I was playing the old one, every minute, every turn, there was fear in my heart that like one wrong move and I would like just lose the lead.
I think that's where like that was the threshold that I could take.
Yeah.
Like that was like as high of anxiety as I was willing to embrace as a amateur gamer. Because otherwise it was just like on the PS2, I played like the Spice Girls game. You just like dance
what
and like
the
hit the
Spice Girls game.
That was, it was like
there
DDR.
Was a Spice Girls game?
Yeah, it's a Spice Girls game. And it was like, and they did a Britney's Dance Beat one too.
Cool.
Where it's just, you're hitting like X, X, triangle, X and triangle at the same time, circle, square, circle, square, circle. And it's just, and then you watch it on the screen, they're doing, it's literally like DDR, but predominantly with your right thumb.
I'm bad at DDR, but I have a deep and abiding love for it because when I lived in New York, I used to go to Chinatown Fair. And there was this one arcade where people would play DDR and old Chinese men would sit on benches across the street and drink whiskey and eat dumplings and gamble on the DDR games.
Oh my God.
I used to go and do that with them for hours.
That's
and it
funny.
Was so I like love DDR immensely. And that game sounds fun, but I'm insanely bad at those games.
Yeah, no, it's hard, right? The coordination of it, you know? I mean...
Yeah, it's way more challenging, I think, than a thing like you're saying, than a thing like fucking Mario Kart.
I think Mario Kart, at least you can get... your focus is... your focus is channeled in a different way where it's not as I don't know. It's not as annoying.
Yeah. Well, then there's a little more. There's like, even if it's marginally, there's like a little more choice making. Yeah. So you can feel like, oh, if I use a weapon at the right time, or if I take a shortcut, or if I do this thing right, I can like make it's up time.
Fun.
But in that game, if you like get out of your rhythm, you're just like, oh,
exactly. Yeah, the rhythm is like, it's not really that. It just gets harder, and then you don't feel a sense of reward for it. Whereas like with Mario Kart, you felt a clear and tangible sense of reward when you won a certain round. That would move you up to the front of the line in the next round, or like if you placed wherever you placed, that moved you up in the lineup. And then, you know, at the end, there's the trophy ceremony, and that's a big deal. You know, gosh,
love a trophy ceremony.
What's not to like about that? You go to the castle, you go on these pedestals, they raise you, and there's the balloon fish. It blows up in the air, and then trophies fall from the sky.
Yeah, Nintendo does have a good job of like doing the winners at the end of matches.
It's a huge deal. Oh my
God. No, Nintendo, like Nintendo does a lot of things very well, but maybe top of the list is just making you feel good about playing a video game.
Yeah, exactly.
Like every game they make is like designed to like make you be like, oh,
it makes
that
you
was
feel
nice.
Good. I felt that way too playing the Game Boy Mario too, which I can't remember. You'd go into outer space in that one. There were different different little realms that you would go into on the Game Boy.
Oh, was that Mario Galaxy? That Mario Brothers 3?
Mario what?
Is that Super Mario World or?
I think it was Super Mario World. I think it was Super Mario World.
Yeah, Super Mario World. You bounce around a lot of different places.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
So the last thing I had to mention about this game is a topic we haven't talked about yet. So there's the racing mode, but there's also this battle mode.
Yeah. Which, you gotta pop balloons.
What a negative vocal reaction that got from everyone who's not Griffin.
How do you feel about battle mode?
Oh, that takes me right back to my relationship with my sister. So we play that and that, my sister would genuinely get like so angry when we play games and like I was doing better than her. Like it would genuinely piss her off. I mean, it annoyed me too when I lost things, but like, I don't know. I think I had the expectation as a younger sister. I think in her mind, it fucked with her alpha, older sister, status to lose a video game. What's that?
So you're fucking with her gorilla mindset.
I think so. I think so. And so, you know, we didn't do battle mode all the time.
You enjoyed the mode? Did you? Because I don't like it.
So, you know, it was fun, though, to sometimes, like, when you play by yourself and then pretend you're in two-player mode, you could just crash your car into the other person and kill them three times. I had a lot of anger sometimes. I did that. I would do that, or I would, like...
That's so funny, because I did that in a James Bond game. It was, like, Nightfire or something. Yeah, like, when I didn't have my neighbor come over to play with me, I would just do two-player and, like, shoot RPGs at myself, like, shoot rocket launchers at myself.
That's great.
See, the PC kid who didn't get a console till later in life version of that is I used to have toy trains that I would set on tracks to crash into each other.
It's funny. You know, it doesn't feel evil, but like
every
you're on top of a skyscraper.
Every parent must think they're raising a serial killer, right?
Probably. Yeah.
No, like there's just something like there are some things in life that like as you get older you're like this is a tragedy, but like things crashing into each other is like a cool piece of physics.
Think it's
like I can see how David Cronenberg or rather Cronenberg rather
Michael Bay,
J.G. Ballard,
Michael
write
Bay.
A whole book about people who get super horny after car crashes.
Is that Crash?
Yeah, Crash the book by J.G. Ballard.
Nice.
That's gnarly.
Had car crash,
well, car before this podcast comes crashing down around us, we should go to a commercial break.
How much does your head move when you talk? If you're like me and many other people, it's not enough. You want to be more like a bobblehead, or maybe Jay Leno. But we can do one thing to get you to the first thing, if not the second thing. Come to my house, which has a garage labeled Derek Dooley's Bobblehead Business, and we will turn you from a person to a bobblehead.
What the fuck are you guys doing in my garage? What is this? I'm Jay Leno. What are you doing in my garage? This is my Jay Leno impression, and get out of my garage.
No, we're running a business out of here. I'm zoned by the county.
I'm far too rich and successful, and this impression is too good for this to continue.
Okay, well, come down to my garage. It's Jay Leno's house, and we can turn your head into a bobblehead with a spring. That's all I can really say. He's chasing me out right now. He's grabbing a gun. I gotta go.
Okay, I want 10%.
Hey there, internet, and welcome back to the Game Boys podcast. My name is still Lux. Your co-host is still Griffin, and your guest is still Chelsea Pope. I got Griffin to laugh that time, so I'm getting better at it. Or maybe worse. Who even knows anymore? Anyways, we're still here talking Mario Kart, and it's time for us to rate that game, boys and girl. So
thank you kindly.
Hey, you're more than welcome. The way this works is that we go around in a circle and we give our ratings on a scale from 1 to 5 joysticks of how we feel about this game and give our final thoughts about it. You being our guest get to go first because that is common courtesy, so please go ahead and start us off.
Oh, my rating of Mario Kart from 1 to 5 joysticks is definitely 5 joysticks.
It's all right,
fucking rad game. I love it.
All right, well, that was easy.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, for all the reasons she said before, I mean, it seemed pretty clear that this is going to be a 5 out of 5 for Chelsea.
How about for you, though, Griff?
I could have picked a mediocre game that I had lukewarm feelings about, but I feel like I would have
just had games less you emotionally about connect it, with for whatever reason. Yeah. So you pick one that you connect totally with because you liked it, which is what most people do, which makes the rating segment kind of dumb.
Well, it's just everything about the podcast is dumb, so it's fine.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
For me, I really like this franchise. I always feel, though, that like I'm done with it after 20 minutes, if that makes any sense. I know it's supposed to be like arcadey and stuff, but I have always, like I grew up not playing video games with like friends. I was always playing like the single player one, so it doesn't have that like nostalgia feeling for me. And I wish that they like built out the campaigns of these games more somehow.
Sure.
Like, had something just a little more to sink my teeth into, whether if it was like a narrative story element or something, and I'm not really sure if any of the games have done that past. I'm really just speaking of 64, which I've played, and the newest one. So I think it's a very polished game. It's doing what it's trying to do very well, but there's always feel like there's something missing, and I see them trying to do it.
I see them trying to do it
with battle mode, trying to give something else going on, but
shake
battle
it
mode
up. It
is not fun to play. It's a really good game, but I always feel like what is that missing thing that's going to make this a perfect game? I don't know what it is, so I'm going to give this a 4 out of 5 joysticks.
That's chill. All right. That's fair.
I think that's a fair rating. You guys know my rules. I think that a game gets 5 out of 5 is doing it's trying to do, but not if there's a game out there that does it better, and there is, I think, a game out there that does it better.
Uh-oh.
Let's take a quick sideline trip and talk about Crash Team Racing.
Oh, thank you. Someone had to do this.
I haven't tried that.
You haven't tried Crash Team Racing?
CTR is my favorite racing game. Mm-hmm. It's better than Pod Racer. It's better than Mario Kart. It's better than...
Pod Racer? You mean the Star Wars one?
The Pod Racing game for N64?
Oh, yeah, my God. That was a great game. That's a whole other thing to talk about. I mean, going to Target just because they had that demo of it out and the kids in line just to play the demo while their moms were shopping.
Oh, hell yeah.
That's wild.
I ride hard for CTR. I think it's like it. I think that it's does the like, it's.
Yeah, what does it do differently that you like so much?
I think its theming is a little more fun and like more Mario theme. The theming in Mario Kart is sort of just like, and here's ice. And what if it's a racetrack? Like, what if it's
lava?
Yeah, what if it's a highway?
Yeah, what if lava? Crash, what if snowmen? Yeah.
CTR stuff feels a little more tied into the lore of Crash Bandicoot and stuff. And I just think that it handles a little bit better. I think it's a little more fun. I think a lot of the sound design goofs are a little funnier. I've always thought that Crash Bandicoot had like a better sense of humor than Mario.
Oh, yeah. No, it's definitely a fun... I had Crash Bandicoot Warped.
Yeah.
That was the one that I played a lot.
You mean Crash Bandicoot Warped?
Warped! Warped! And I always went... Like, the hardest one for me was always the sister on the tiger. Or was it his girlfriend? Yeah. Sister, right?
On the Great Wall.
Doing the tiger. Levels. That one was always really hard.
Replaying those over and over again.
Yeah.
And then I played it recently and beat it the first time. I was like, oh, this is just kid difficult.
It was super kid difficult.
But Lux, take us home with your rating.
So I'm going to give it... I'll also give it a 4 out of 5 just because, like... I like CTR better, man, so it can't be a 5.
That's fair.
I guess it'll be a 4.5, but I'm just like not feeling it. Anyways, it's Yom Kippur.
It's still an excellent game. Thank you for bringing it on.
Awesome. Yeah. Happy to be here.
And so now it's time for everybody's favorite segment, Mentalietta Segments. That's right. It's time for the segment. Griffin, you want to go first? Or you want me to start us off?
Yeah, guys, I'm bringing back a very popular segment for the show. That's right. We're doing the dating game.
Oh, man.
Now, Chelsea, I'm going to read the descriptions of 3 mystery contestants.
Oh,
they're
going
to tell you a little bit about themselves. They're all racers from the Mario Kart franchise.
Oh, okay.
And then you get to decide which one that you're going home with tonight. Is that how dating game works?
Basically.
Yeah. It's kind of like that.
Going
it's
on
like,
a date with.
I think you just go on a date. I don't think you go
there's
to their
three
house
contestants.
Right away.
I'm kind of like, hey, bachelor number one.
The dating game where there was a guy who turned out to be a murderer and then the lady won and she met him and was like, I'm not going on a date with this guy. He seems like
holy
a creepo.
That's a real thing?
Yeah.
Okay, but she she didn't get murdered.
No,
so.
she like was like, oh, Redfall alarms, a big alarm.
Well, I'm not sure, you know, I can't say that none of these are murderers. So,
so watch out.
Bachelor number one, don't let my flower attire get you confused. I'm more than your average princess. I'm a fun-loving tomboy with a penchant for honking my horn. Bachelor number two, I'm kind of a foodie, so there's always eggs in my mouth. I'm aloof and don't subscribe to normal gender binaries.
Oh my gosh, just like every other guy I've ever dated.
Bachelor three, I'm a timid troublemaker.
No, just kidding. That's my ex there.
I'm going to take it slow before I show you my true face.
Wow. Okay.
And if you need me to reread any of these again for you, the first one is a tomboy princess. The second one is a foodie that doesn't subscribe to gender binaries.
All right.
The third's a timid troublemaker.
Timid troublemaker?
Troublemaker.
Troublemaker, okay.
He's a troublemaker.
It sounded like
he's
a troublemaker both times, so I was also confused.
Yeah, yeah, so I was wondering. It's like, oh.
A timid, you say that five times fast. Timid troublemaker.
Yeah, that was what I said. It was just funny, the idea of throwing trouble in an oven and closing it and pulling it out.
That's tough because on one hand, the Bachelor 2, you know, doesn't subscribe to like gender binaries. I think that's
very woke right now.
You know, it's very woke and interesting. I do appreciate a good alpha. That's my thing. Mm. I really like the assertiveness of the tomboy princess to say, you know, don't, you know, I'm not a pushover.
Sure.
Whereas, you know, a reluctant troublemaker. I'm intrigued, but they sound like a shy guy.
Yeah, who leads with that?
I'm submissive. I'm a hard beta. So you know, I'm gonna probably go tomboy princess.
Oh, you are going home tonight with Princess Daisy.
All right, Daisy.
She's the princess of Sarasaland. I think it's how you say it.
Yeah, that was right. Remember, there was that one episode where we were doing the wiki dive on Princess Daisy, and it got all fucked up. But that was the name of her place.
And her power actually is that she can honk her horn so loud that it throws people off the track.
I love that.
So she's a little bit of a road rager.
Oh my gosh, I connect with her already.
All right, Griffin, Lux, I need you to vamp for like 30 seconds because you used two of the three characters I was going to use for my segment for your segment. So I need to think about this for a second.
Are you telling me we should plan this?
Are you telling me?
I'm
telling you to vamp for 30 seconds. You can do that.
You're going to look up other ones?
Or the other two?
It was like Shy Guy.
Yeah,
like, you know, the guys with the mask.
Yes.
And the little redheads or whatever. And then the other one was Birdie, which is like,
I think I know Birdie.
Okay, you do know Birdie. Birdie is like the Yoshi counterpart. It's like the pink one with like the weird mouth hole.
I know exactly who you're talking about. I picked right.
Birdie doesn't subscribe to binaries.
I'm not interested in Birdie.
The name is Birdo.
Bird, sorry.
Anyways,
oh my gosh.
Now I'm back. And we're going to keep running back the segment that so far has yet to go terribly wrong. We're going to do They Eat Ass? I'm going to list three characters also from the Mario Kart universe, and you decide whether it is through cooperative conversation or combative conflict. Do they eat ass?
Oh, man.
So we'll start with the one that Griffin didn't use, who is on my list, and that would be Lockitu, the Watchman. Does Lockitu eat ass?
Does he eat ass?
it's hard with this game. It's like, because if we say they don't, is that make them a bad person?
No, I mean, some people don't eat ass for lots of reasons.
I don't think there's a morality to...
There's no morality to ass eating?
Ass eating is just, you know...
It's a preference.
Preference, it's exactly. Purely preference. It's just like a dietary preference.
The morality comes in your rationale, not your choice.
You're not a good or bad person if you're a vegetarian. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, some people would disagree with that, but you know what I mean. It's like...
Yeah, no, I think that's totally reasonable.
Yeah. There you go. I would say, yeah, he probably eats ass, though.
Yeah, he seems like
he seems like somebody who's like a quiet but kinky.
Undercover freak. He's got exactly that. He's got
that
hook.
Well, where's that going?
And I agree with you because he exists to support people.
Right.
You know, he's very giving. What is he doing there other than just pulling people up from their bootstraps?
Yeah.
And filming their race.
Yeah, and filming the race.
Yeah.
All right, good. I think we can all agree on that one. Next up, we've got Big Bad Boss Bowser.
I think he likes to have his ass eaten.
Yeah, exactly.
I would say he probably...
Classic villain.
Classic villain likes to have his own ass eaten.
But will not reciprocate.
I think he's a taker, not a giver.
Bowser is so self-centered.
He's very self-centered.
Bowser is definitely a taker.
He's definitely not a giver. Yeah, no.
That's unanimous on that one,
now,
too.
Yeah. The Mario Kart character closest to me in both appearance and behavior. What do you guys think about Wario? Is Wario does Wario eat ass?
I think he eats ass, but can't have it. He doesn't get anybody to eat his, though. He probably can't, like, actually get
I think he's
his.
One of those crazy guys that, like, leads with that on, like, the Bumble messages and, like, stuff like that. Like,
oh.
leads
I'll eat your
on
ass.
Dating apps. Like, that's, like, first message from
It's,
Wario.
Like, all lowercase.
Like,
I'll
like
eat your
Wario
ass.
Will always, Wario will do it, but it's, like, he's so forward about it that it's not fun.
Yeah. It's, like, FYI, I eat ass. And it's, like, all right, dude, my
yeah,
name's
Stacy. Yeah, you're, like, all right,
Stacy.
Fine, I'll go with you, but I'm not going to return the favor, okay?
Yeah.
Because you look like an ass, and I'm just not, I'm not interested.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
I don't want to have to look at you, but you can eat my ass. I'll look at a
no, that's,
picture.
Yeah, I guess that's an ideal sex move for Wario because he's like hidden from view totally. So you don't have to deal with his weird mustache.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, I bet it's funny to imagine before having sex, Wario saying, I'm gonna win. That's his catchphrase. I think it's a real.
Wario's not a competition.
Wario,
you know, he's
sex.
Got that,
just,
like, that nose
together
too.
Here. He's like, I'm gonna win.
Yeah, his nose.
His nose is probably way more stimulating than Mario's too, as far as ass eating.
Oh, yeah. If you put that nose to work, he could do some shit.
I mean, seriously, butt plug.
Now it's like, I fear for every Mario character that they're gonna be tainted by this presidency and that all the body parts of all of our favorite Mario characters are eventually gonna be ligaments of our president somehow.
Yeah.
You know, what's next? Yeah. Like Mario's nose looks like nutsack or something?
Yeah, it looks like his testicles.
I was having sex
I think that's
Trump
Wario's nose, look, though, still.
His butthole like, looks exactly like Waluigi's face.
His pubes look like the Lorax. Like, what are they going to do?
The Lorax is not a Mario character. But yeah,
oh, man,
I understand what you mean. Slowly,
just,
surely, our big wet president is getting his slimy, gross thing
like,
all over.
I like wet.
It's sad.
Our big wet president.
He does look kind of wet.
He seems like he's wet kind of all the time.
He does look really shiny and wet.
He's wet.
It's all
he's
the
like
highlighter.
Slimy and
it's all
squishy and probably full of like gack.
Yeah.
I just, yeah.
I think everyone lost with that story. I'm sorry, it's not a politics podcast, but he seems to me like he's full of gag.
I think
and
it's
also
pretty
fuck
fair.
That dude.
It's
anyways,
fair.
Justice for Toad.
Let's reclaim Toad.
For sure. Toad is still, like, I would say probably my favorite if I had to rank him. Like, as far as the ones I'd play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was going to ask. I'm going to ask that during the earlier part of the conversation. I'm still going to play as Toad, even though I'll never not think about the president's wiener while I'm playing as Toad.
Yeah, right? It's so gross.
But
so
I
gross.
Still think I'll do it. Griffin,
still,
you are shaking your head like there's no way you will ever touch Toad again.
No. I'm shaking my head because I'm just still so pissed at Stormy for doing this.
Oh, my God. Stormy.
It feels like an act of terror. On
wow.
the video game world.
Wow.
That's not hyperbole at all.
This is our, honestly, this is our 9/11.
Oh my God. Oh God, you guys.
I mean,
it gets here a lot, Chelsea. I'm sorry, but this we do
fair.
End up here fairly often.
Yeah, no.
We're in the last 5 minutes of the podcast. No one gets this far.
Yeah, if you guys get this far, you earned the part where I refer to Stormy Daniels calling the president's penis toad like as our 9/11.
If you're just tuning in now, like people doing a podcast.
This is your treat.
Anyways,
take us home, Locked. It's so hot in this room.
I'm going to get done with this before I say another stupid thing that I can avoid. So thank you guys so much for listening. This has been the Game Boys podcast. I'm Lux. You know where to find me, but Chelsea, where can people find you if they want to find more of your stuff?
Oh, thanks, dude. They can find me at Chelsea the Pope on Twitter, Instagram.
So that's what your Pope name would be.
That's what I guess they would just call me Chelsea the Pope. Or I prefer Pope.
That reminds me of Mr. Popo from Dragon Ball Z. But obviously it does. Sorry, I thought I was going to say nothing
good.
Else
Pope
stupid.
Pope is like what you call your grandpa.
Your very sacred grandpa. Your very sacred grandpa.
Where can we find you on the interwebs? Chelsea the Pope?
Yeah, Chelsea the Pope on Instagram and Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I got some little character ditties on YouTube. I don't have like a customized name for that because I don't have a lot of subscribers yet.
Well,
maybe
we can afford to shed a few over to you.
Yeah,
maybe
that'd
you'll
be pretty
get
cool.
3 to 5 off of this in here.
Please, sir, can I have some followers, sir?
More
followers, sir. I need a custom handle, sir. All right, and
so while you're on YouTube checking out Chelsea's very dope shit, you can also check out my work at Wisecrack, and you can also check out Griffin's stuff that's very famous, and you can also find more from us in general at the various social medias that Griffin will tell you about right now.
Game Boys Pod on Instagram. Follow us there and watch our live episode from last week. It's really bad, but it's also fun. Game Luigi's there. It's a great time. Take us home.
And then, we got the Instagram and we got the Facebook. We got the Twitter all at Game Boys Pod. And that will do it for us today. I'm Lux. I'm your host. Your co-host is Griffin Davis. Your guest is Chelsea Pope. Your editor is Haley Clemen. Your intro and outro music is by Matthew Morden and your art is by Brittany Metz. Thank you, Internet. We love you very much.
Bye.
Griffin, are you going to say the name of the game like you do?
Oh, shit. Mario Kart!
gonna win.
That's good.
Justice for Toad.